On this edition of the TWBC podcast, we speak to a skier who's firmly established himself as Canada's top water ski slalomer. We talk to Cole McCormick next.
The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Skiing. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. I am the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot, and thanking you for your continued support. And we're going to go into the interview in this episode with a skier who was who's definitely turned some heads in regards to his slalom technique and performances within the last two or three seasons. His name is Cole McCormick. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, Tony. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. We're recording this episode here at Jack Travers's place, ITS, just before the Travers Grand Prix. Kind of give us a little bit of a summation of how your season has gone thus far.
It's been interesting. Start of the year, I kind of started off slow, and then right around the qualifiers for the Masters, I started skiing really well, so that was pretty fun, having the big runoff at Drew's and qualifying for Masters, and got the privilege and the chance to ski World Games this year, which was a awesome experience. And then shortly after, kind of had an ankle injury out in California, and before Mastercraft Pro, I was I only had like a week of practice before Mastercraft Pro. I was in a walking boot for two solid weeks before that, and
oh, wow.
So I was very thrilled with how Mastercraft Pro went for me.
All right, then. So let's go one by one. You basically gave us a little bit of a Cliff Notes version of how your season went. But let's, you qualified for the Masters, qualified to ski on the hallowed waters, as it were, of Robin Lake. You know, hallowed by the fact that it's very, very historical in the general terms of skiing. Probably not the best of conditions to ski in this day and age. But how did things go for you there?
They kind of went okay. I got fifth place, which was the same placement I got the year before, and actually ran the same exact score as the year before. But I felt better this year. Just, you know, didn't quite put it together like I wanted to. It was a fun tournament. It's always good, even just getting a chance to ski the Masters, because it's so hard to qualify, which is part of the reason why the waters are so, you know, quote unquote hallowed, or whatever you were saying. You know, it's just super difficult to qualify for that tournament. So getting your name in the list of eight or nine people that get to ski there is just awesome.
Absolutely. Ended up fifth in the Masters, you know, which is always a great achievement by itself. So you had your eyes set on doing a whole bunch of tournaments this season. What was the one that came afterwards, directly after the Masters?
Lake 38 was the next one. Yeah.
Oh yes, I remembered you skiing in that one. So how did that work out for you?
That one worked out really well. I got second place in that one, which is, you know, about as good as I could have hoped for. I mean, not everyone was there, but the top two guys were there, and to come out second place amongst the people who were there, I was very happy with that, and I skied super consistent the whole week, or the whole weekend, should I say. So I was pretty happy with that.
Must be a bit of an adjustment going from the Masters, which is pretty suspect water at best, to like having the perfect conditions right up there outside Tallahassee at Lake 38. You know, you relied upon conditions.
Yeah, I mean, you have to approach the tournament in a completely different way. You know, at Masters, you've got a deep lake with a lot of rollers, and it's just all about staying on top of the water, keeping moving, not letting your hips get behind you, and those are kind of like the big things you have to focus on to make sure you don't, you know, have any unfortunate mishaps and go down early or something like that. Whereas if when you're at Lake 38, you know, it's more like a record tournament, and you're just trying to get the high scores, so you're focusing more on the normal stuff that you would like you would focus on at any record tournament or in practice, because it's a perfect lake, you know, with the one of the best drivers in the world, and you know, Keith's place is amazing. So it's just kind of two different things you have to think about.
Indeed. You know, a little bit earlier on the season, I actually approached you to kind of give me the elevator pitch on your slalom ski at La Pointe, and you did say that by the fact that the ski's design is a little wider up front, it allows the ski to actually come through by the time the zero off kicks in a little bit there. So a pretty significant advantage for you in like the Masters and for other record tournaments starting with Lake 38. Kind of give us a little bit of what you told me about your ski's design and how that's benefited you since you transitioned onto it.
Yeah, so the whole idea behind Chris's ski is he kind of wanted to come up with the ultimate zero off tool. You know, back when we were on perfect pass and hand driving, it was a lot of turn hard, work hard, you know, ski hard, and there was a lot less finesse. And now with zero off, you're trying not to spike the boat, and you're trying to move through the turn without create angle without creating load when you're turning the ski. So basically Chris has made a ski that's wide under the front foot, so basically anytime you would normally get in deep and you know, be heavy at the turn, that extra width is going to keep you up and get you like, or keep you more on top of the water. So you kind of move through the turn a little better, and you don't get stuck like you normally would on another ski.
So if there is room to move off the turn and through the wakes, then this ski allows you to take full advantage of that situation, right?
Yeah. And then because it's so wide, you have to still make the ski turn somehow, because if you just make a ski wide, it's just going to be harder to turn normally. But Chris has done something with the rocker. He's got a little more tail rocker in the ski than a typical ski would have, so basically it just kind of rolls through the turn, and without you having to move much on the ski, you can just stay still and the ski just rolls through the turn.
All right, then. So moving through the season, now you've given me a little bit of an elevator pitch on that slalom ski, and World Games, which occurred in the middle of the summer. You had the privilege of being Canada's representative in the men's slalom, because in each event, to the best of my knowledge, each nation gets one representative, right?
Yeah, everyone. I think each country got up to five representatives in total, and I think you could only have one in each event for like each, you know, so like one men's slalom representative, one men's jump representative, that kind of thing. Like, I don't think you could double up anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so after round one, you were sitting pretty, weren't you?
Oh yeah, that was super cool. That lake was really hard to ski on. It's skied a lot like Robin Lake, just so many rollers seawalls.
So basically anyone who skied in the Masters already had a fairly good idea of how to handle the conditions that Oak Mountain Park, you know, would throw at them with the rock walls and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar. Oak Mountain was harder. There were just so many seawalls everywhere. It was kind of, it was just hard. It was really hard. Even if you felt like you were on your game, you could hit a roller and just kind of get sent flying. I mean, it kind of speaks to the fact that to make the finals, all you had to do was run 32 off. It was so hard. I mean, there were, you know, at least eight people there that are fully capable of running 39. It was so backwashy. And even if you came in with a game plan and you felt good on your ski, if you hit a roller just wrong, you could just be out of it. The first round, I mean, I was lucky and I stayed on my ski and didn't hit anything weird, and I put up 4:39 and was absolutely thrilled with that. And then to top it off, I was top seed, which I didn't in a million years expect ever to happen, with Nate Smith at the tournament. So that was cool.
All right, then. So, I mean, and the World Games, just in case those of you are hearing about it for the first time, it's basically the closest that water skiing typically gets to being part of an Olympic program. It's endorsed by the IOC. It's basically the Olympics for non-Olympic sports. So kind of give us a little bit of a description of how that quote-unquote Olympian experience was in Birmingham. Birmingham, Alabama, because I mean it's totally different and a complete world away from what you typically are get used to on a weekend by weekend basis on the water ski pro tour.
Yeah, I mean that's what made the tournament worthwhile for me. It was like because it was tough conditions, so normally you know you'd have you know people wouldn't be necessarily the most happy to ski there, but it was such a cool experience. I mean, we all got to stay. They had the University of Birmingham let us all stay in their dormitories on campus, and so we kind of all went to a dining hall every day, and we got to meet tons of athletes. And then every day when we were going out to the site, we were all in a bus and had a security escort by the Birmingham State Police officer or the Alabama State Police officers. Yeah. So they didn't have to stop at any stoplights. We just like went straight out to the lake on bus. So that kind of made us feel really cool. And then we had lunches every day, and they had like athlete areas roped off that spectators couldn't come into. And we were only the athletes were granted access. And then Oak Mountain itself as a park was sold out every day we were up there.
So nice.
That was very cool. So we had the shores and the stands packed every day. We were out there even like for trick, for slalom, for jump, like everyone was out there. And it wasn't just competitors, it was people that I had never met before coming out from Alabama that just ski on the weekends on their big lake behind a boat they bought. And they just wanted to come experience water skiing and see what tournament water skiing was all about. And that was probably the coolest part.
Yeah, and I mean, and taking into consideration that that many of the other sports in the World Games were struggling to meet pre-event expectations so far as crowd participation and filling the arenas and stuff like that. You mentioned that you lunched a little bit with athletes in other sports. Were there any sports that you were kind of intrigued about? You know, with some of the other athletes. I mean, because I mean, we're talking like separate events of martial arts. There's canopy flying, you know, with the sports shoots and what have you. I mean, there's so many other sports there that don't normally get the recognition. Yeah, where does that come from? Yeah.
they had drone racing up there.
Oh, they had drone racing.
Yeah, and they had rock wall climbing, like a few different rock wall events. Probably one of the coolest ones to watch was beach handball. That was absolutely insane. You had people spinning and like trying to alley-oop it to each other to throw it in to get extra points. It was so cool.
Now rock climbing is a discipline of rock climbing is part of the Olympic program. It's the speed climbing, but I mean we're talking like bouldering, right?
Where
they take their time, survey it, and then they just have to climb to the top, and all that kind of stuff. It's no speed to it, right?
Yeah, it was bouldering's done without a harness, you know, so you're just kind of free climbing up, and I've done it myself. It's super fun. It's like a crazy upper body workout. Very cool.
All right, then. So we talked about your first round performance. The final round, maybe a performance that you wanted to forget, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly felt pretty good in the finals, and I just, you know, like I was saying before, I just made a small mistake, and in all the rollers, it's whenever you make the mistake, you just kind of have to keep going and try to not make another mistake and not try to aggressively catch back up, because that's when you get in trouble in rollers. And I made two mistakes and unfortunately missed 38 so in the finals, which was a real bummer, but you know, it happens. It was a cool experience. I got to be top seed for the finals, that's never happened to me before, so that was super fun. And I still walked away with a third place medal. So
and probably good prep for Moomba next year if you're fortunate enough to be involved in that event, huh?
Yeah, I still have yet to go to Moomba. I've heard it's a lot of fun. It just never really works out on my schedule, but hopefully one of these next couple of years I'll make it out there.
I mean, we certainly look forward to you making a first appearance at Moomba. Maybe next season, maybe the season after, but certainly on your bucket list anyway. Shortly afterwards, you know, the irony is you've been through a couple of the worst tournaments that you probably have in your schedule so far as conditioning goes, and then the injury comes along.
Yeah, which was really unfortunate, because leading up to World Games, I actually skied a lot of record turns. I think I skied four record tournaments and got a piece of four ball at 41 in every record tournament. I was, I was really trying to work towards knocking the pass down, and I hadn't done it yet, but I was skiing really well. And I even up at Hilltop, I ran four. So I've been knocking on the door all summer. And then I, unfortunately, out in California, the second round, I got a high ankle sprain, which put me in a walking boot for 2 weeks. So I go to the gym and stuff, but I couldn't do anything really like put pressure like on my foot. And so I didn't get the practice for two solid weeks. And then once I finally got out of it, I got about a week to train for Mastercraft Pro because I had already signed up for it. So,
all right then. So obviously high ankle sprain notwithstanding, but I mean, you still had plenty of events to go to the Mastercraft Pro. You hinted upon Hilltop and everything. So you still continue to work out, obviously not working out the ankle quite as much. I mean, what is typically in your workout schedule every time you get set in there? Is it cardio? Is it strength? Is it flexibility? Or is it more of one, little of the other, that type of deal?
It's honestly not a lot of cardio because we as water ski athletes get a lot when we're out there, especially me, because I like usually when I drop on the end in practice, I don't like to stay there for very long. I get up and keep going, so my cardio is usually pretty good, and you get it from moving through your exercises pretty quickly. But I mean, I train at RSP a lot in Claremont, and we just kind of tapered my workout to kind of avoid putting pressure like on my foot and stuff. So I did a lot of upper body stuff, and I did things that worked out the legs without actually, you know, doing deadlifts or like leg presses or anything like that. So I still got to, you know, train legs, train upper body and all that stuff without injuring my ankle. So stayed in shape the whole 2 weeks.
Excellent. So now we're at this point of the season, pretty much the running towards the end of the season. We got Travis Grand Prix, which you know, it's an unusual event. You know, it's not like the three events of water skiing. It's like the three events of whatever. You know, you got slalom, you got shooting, you got go karting. I mean, obviously, you look forward to slalom. But what's your second best event out there?
It's probably skeet shooting. I grew up hunting with my dad all the time, and so I'm pretty good at shooting a gun anyway. And then before the first edition of this tournament, I had never shot skeet before, so my dad took me out to the range, and we shot skeet for a couple hours until I got the hang of it. And then I think the first year I shot either 8 or 9 for 10, and then the second year I shot 10 for 10. I was one of like four people who shot 10 for 10.
Yeah, so you got into a shoot off with Zane and Zane Nicholson and I think one other, didn't you?
Or Zane, Paul Kulig, and John Travers. We were the only four who shot 10 for 10, so we all had a shoot off at the end. And I'm 99% sure Zane won. I can't remember, but I think Zane won that one.
I'm sure he'll be in. He won't hesitate to remind us during the course of that tournament via his Instagrams if he's not already dealing with stuff going on with Louisiana Monroe. Speaking of which, a lot of pro skiers have taken the route to do collegiate water skiing. Did you ever go that route? I think it was Florida Southern College, right?
Yeah, I went to Florida Southern College. And honestly, when I was in high school, I didn't even know there was such thing as collegiate water skiing, which sounds kind of crazy because, like, I mean, everyone knows about it now, but going through high school, I didn't really know anything about it. My senior year, I was trying to figure out, you know, what I was going to do because I wanted to ski a little bit. But I, you know, at that point, I didn't feel like I was ever going to be a pro. Like I wasn't at that level yet. And so I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. And I was at like spring semester my senior year, and I was at a tournament, and Roger Scalco came up to me and he's like, "Hey, I hear you're a senior. Have you figured out what you're doing for college yet?" And I said, "No, not really. I looked at a couple colleges that are
sounded, you know, like an army recruiter."
Yeah, close to the lake, so I could go ski. And he's like, "Well, we have a ski team, and I'll give you a scholarship to ski on the team." I'm like, "Really?
Oh, okay."
Yeah, so that's kind of how that got started. And unfortunately, he passed away the spring semester my freshman year, which was just tragic. And but luckily, we had Curtis Rabe took over for the team, and he's really been great for the team. He's, you know, such a positive attitude and kind of kept all our spirits high. And I learned a ton while I was in college. And my freshman year, I entered college with a PB of 5 at 35 and left college with a PB of 3 at 41. So
that rate of improvement, I think there'll be a few folks out there on the verge of going to college like, sign me up, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's not the typical rate of progression for most people, but no. I kind of grown up scheme with just lucky my dad and my mom, and those were like the only three coaches I had, and they, you know, they all kind of looked at the slalom course the same way, which is, I mean, it's great, they're all fantastic skiers, but kind of what set me off as I started skiing with like Casey Wilson and Tebow and a few other people who kind of like opened my head up to a different way of thinking. And I started using video a lot to self-coach myself, and I would compare to video of a lot of pro guys on the tour, like what am I doing differently, what's going different here. And so I just kind of took off from there. And I even in jump, like I picked up 25 feet in jump when I went to school too.
Don't forget, I mean you're a dual event threat. I mean, did you do any tricking? Or
I did, yeah. Actually, for the longest time I was known as a tricker, because right from like boys two I was tricking just north of 5,000 points, which was I don't know if that's still good for boys two, but that was good whenever I was in boys two.
It's decent, you know. Certainly. It would put you on a national team, certainly.
Yeah, I think my personal best in tricks right now is just north of 6,000 points, and my personal best in jump is 170 feet. So, I mean, I was pretty decent three events here.
Indeed. And obviously one of the very best three event skiers in the history of the sport was your father, Ricky McCormick. And we go to that question a little bit. I may have asked you it before in another podcast, but I mean, his influence and that of your mom's, you know, Susie Graham McCormick, you know, I mean, right there, you've got two of the greatest skiers in the world for their respective eras, you know. So I mean, you must have gotten a little bit out of those two individuals along the way.
Oh yeah, I mean, everyone talks about, you know, how like I'm so, whenever I slalom, I ski so aggressively and intense behind the boat and stuff, and that's kind of the number one thing my dad, my mom, and Lucky all preach is like form first, and you've got to be ready to go to war with the boat when you go behind the boat. And so that's what everyone always tells me, like I always have like a super strong position behind the boat, and I'm a fighter just like my mom was. And like I kind of get all of that from Lucky, my mom, my dad there. I mean, they're all from, you know, the same kind of line of thinking, and they just taught me to never give up and kind of always like be aggressive and never think you're out of a pass, right? From like, even if you mess up, you know, there's always a way to get through the pass, there's always a way to keep going.
But consider the juxtaposition of being able to get from one side of the wake through to the other, you know, without putting too much load on the ski. I mean, we're talking like guys like Charlie Ross, who seems to be able to do that impeccably well. I mean, and like Nate Smith, of course, you know, he puts a little bit of load on the boat, but he's still able to get from one side to the next. You've seen video of both of these skiers, no doubt, and wanted to pick up little bits and pieces to use. So Is that a road that you're prepared to go down along, you know, maybe in the off season, you know, working on gaining an advantage, or are you still tried and true with like the grip it and rip it?
Well, I've changed my style a lot in the last 2 years. Obviously I've lost a lot of weight in the last 2 years too, right? I was the first year I was on Chris's ski, I skied that year at like 198 pounds, and now I'm sitting pretty steady at like 176, 177.
There you go.
And I'm much more swingy on the boat than I used to be. I used to be very, very much like pull, reach, turn. Like, you know, I kind of thought I knew what I was doing, but I didn't really know what I was doing. You know, there wasn't really any swing on the boat or anything like that. Now that I'm lighter, I can actually swing on the boat, and it's a little different. And Charlie and Nate, they put a lot more pressure on the boat than you realize they do. They just do it all in the right spot. They do it behind the boat, which is, I mean, everyone does it. Some do it better than others, but Nate and Charlie are probably two of the most efficient people, like, on the slalom course. You know, they're so light and agile at the buoy, and then they work in the right spot behind the boat.
Okay, so aside from that, I mean, obviously we're coming up to the end of the season. You're skiing in this event. You'll probably ski at the Miami Pro right in November, and then comes Thanksgiving, and then you've got the festive season, and then you're just trying to pick the events that you want to ski in for the season to come after that. So there is a significant off season. So do you have any plans on what you're doing in the off season, both in skiing and preparing for skiing, and anything else that comes your way?
Yeah, I mean, Chris and I have already talked about it a little bit. We have a few different things we want to try with my ski and my equipment and things like that. And usually he has some big thing for me to work on over the winter. Normally, like the first set I come out to his lake to ski in the off season, you know, he'll sit me down and have a discussion at his car. Like, this is a big thing, but this is something I want you to work on over the off season. And that's the only thing you take away from this off season, that's our goal, is to get you looking like this and doing this. So that's kind of what it's been the past 2 years, is I'll have like one big technique thing to work on over the winter.
All right, so with that in mind, we'll wrap this podcast up a little bit. Just giving you an opportunity to say any acknowledgements, any thanks, or that kind of stuff to kind of wrap this up.
Yeah, I guess thanks to Chris LaPointe, my parents. Thanks to all the Travers for letting me ski out here at their lake. This has kind of been my home site for the past 3 years, ever since I bought a house up close to here. So I'm, you know, unbelievably thankful to them for letting me come out here and ski with them all the time. And thanks to all my sponsors. You know, you guys are awesome. Couldn't do this without you either.
All right, then. That was Cole McCormick, and this is Tony Lightfoot with this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. And until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.